Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a great show for you today. Let's see what's on the docket. First, a hearing in the Chad Daybell matter. Second, did the police fumble the Bumble dating app death investigation? Ethan Crumley going insane. Fourth, the unintended consequences of crime. Prince Andrew, he gives an answer. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. It is Thursday, January 27th, 2022. Now, before we get to the docket, please remember, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button, hit that like button, hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we put up new content or go live. Now, remember, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us on all of your podcasting apps. And you may not have heard this, but It's true. Neil Young didn't want Crime Talk on Spotify either. Well, guess what? Spotify chose us. So you can listen to us there as well as your favorite podcasting apps. Let's get to the docket. First, there was a hearing in the Chad Daybell matter. Now, what usually happens in the Lori Vallow Chad Daybell matters? Well, usually we have a hearing to request a hearing for another hearing. And guess what? You will not be disappointed. We put the video up today, and today was a hearing regarding the motion to continue the filing of 12B6 motions. Well, what is a 12B6 motion? It is basically a motion to dismiss for some sort of defect in the pleading. And here, document is the indictment, which you have to say that there was some sort of structural defect with the grand jury proceedings. Like maybe there wasn't a quorum. Maybe somebody was allowed into the proceedings when they shouldn't have been permitted. Was there an actual vote? Was there enough of people in a quorum to actually hold a vote? Those types of issues that take place. That would be a 12B6 motion. These are normally due within 28 days after arraignment. Well, Chad Daybell's entered a plea of not guilty back in June. His motions would have been due in July. Well, there were motions to extend the 12B date, in August as well as September, because of delays in the preparation of the grand jury transcripts. Fine, the court does that. Well, here we are. John Pryor, the attorney for Chad Daybell, gives an explanation and basically says, Judge, there's no excusable neglect issue here. I've been very diligent. I've been trying to get these grand jury transcripts. It took longer than expected. And there were 5 days of transcripts. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not that long, okay? Think about it. Appellate attorneys look at transcripts from hearings for trials that go for weeks, as well as prior motions hearings. 5 days of a transcript is not that voluminous. And then John Pryor stated to the court that he had to go back and then look at the transcript for the preliminary hearing to see if there were any issues that had to take place, for inconsistencies. Not sure what that has to do with the 12B6 motion at all, but needless to say, Judge Boyce granted John Pryor additional time. There's going to be a hearing on March 23rd at 9 a.m. regarding the motion for 12B6, if there is one that is filed by the filing deadline, which is March 9th of this year. I understand the attorney has to do his job and he needs to preserve any issues that exist. The prosecutor in this case, Mr. Wood, actually did a very good job saying, Judge, he hasn't done anything. He hasn't been diligent. And the court said, well, we don't have a trial date until next year. That's right, 2023. So what's the harm? We'll let him do it, but you better have something filed by then. John Pryor said he would. We'll see. He seems to always have a problem in getting something filed on time. And even when he does file something, it is a little thin on facts and the law. We'll see if something gets a little better on this particular moment. But yes, another delay in the Chad Daybell matter. I get trial is a year out, but the sooner the issues are framed, which means the judge needs to set hard deadlines so that legal issues can be resolved, That will help frame the case, and it oftentimes leads to resolution. When the unknown exists and you don't know what's coming in and what's going to be not admitted into evidence, well, that doesn't create decisiveness. Indecisiveness creates uncertainty. You can't have that. You need decisions made so that people have decisions to make. They need deadlines so that they can actually comply with those deadlines, because deadlines, ladies and gentlemen, force decisions. We've all heard the old adage, the job expands to the amount of time given. So if the court were to impose deadlines, and if you miss those deadlines, guess what? You actually comply. And I don't know what's going on in the legal world once, because I remember I filed a motion once. I complied with the court order on a post-conviction matter, and the court thanked me for filing the motion on time, and I was looking at her rather perplexed, and I'm like, well, of course I would file it on time, Your Honor, because that was the deadline that you set. She goes, oh, you'd be surprised. People miss deadlines. They ask for more time all the time. I'm like, well, I'm a firm believer in let's get it done. Judge Boyce should adopt an attitude of, we're going to get this done so we can get this case done. Next on the docket, did the police fumble the Bumble dating app murder investigation? Well, maybe things aren't exactly as they appear to be. Remember we brought you the story yesterday? Well, let's give a quick recap. Well, the Bridgeport, Connecticut Police Department continued to investigate the death of 23-year-old Lauren Smith Fields, who passed away unexpectedly on December 21st of 2021. Apparently, she had gone on a date with a man she met on Bumble, the dating app. Well, the medical examiner determined her death was caused by a mixture of fentanyl, prescription medications, and alcohol. Now, the man who found her body on the floor of the apartment has been identified as a man by the name of Matthew LaFontaine of Milford, Connecticut. His lawyer has announced that the Bridgeport police did investigate her. His lawyer announced that the police did investigate the matter, and his client completely cooperated, and he is not the main focus of the investigation anymore. Well, the victim's family attorney is pushing for DNA testing after claiming a semen-filled condom and bloody bedsheets found at the scene were allegedly compromised by the Bridgeport Police Department. The attorney said it looks more like a murder, and if the police don't start acting fast, we're going to have a real big problem on our hands. It could possibly be murder. And I guess the person that could be responsible, it sounds like, is the person that maybe provided the fentanyl pills. So it sounds like it was a very intense night of partying and taking a lot of drugs and alcohol. That's not necessarily murder. That's people doing crazy things. And it's unfortunate that obviously the victim passed away. I feel terrible for her family. They obviously are going to miss her, and it's a life ended too short. But sometimes people have to look at things for what they are. And sometimes, as Freud used to say, a cigar is just a cigar. It looks like she OD'd. Let's call it for what it is. Now, we'll be open about this if there's some new information that becomes available. But as of right now, it seems like it's just a tragic situation and not anything of a criminal nature. We'll let you know if something changes. Next on the docket, Ethan Crumley. He's going insane. Well, that's right. The teenager charged with killing 4 students at Oxford High School will pursue an insanity defense, according to his lawyers. The notice should lead to several mental health exams on Ethan Crumley, who's being tried as an adult for the shooting that killed the 4 peers and wounded 6 others. A lawsuit was also announced by the attorneys on behalf of Tate Meyer, who was killed by young Mr. Crumley on November 30th in the shooting spree, and the lawsuit alleges that the negligence by the school officials and Crumley's parents is what caused this deadly incident. The lawsuit, which seeks at least $25,000, names the Oxford High School's dean of students, 2 counselors, and 3 teachers as defendants. Crumley and his parents also are named as the defendants, and the state of Michigan filed a notice of intent to rebut the insanity defense. As you may recall from previous conversations that we've, once somebody raises the insanity defense, they will be evaluated. Anything that the person says during that evaluation can be used against them. There is no privilege at this point. And then the report comes back, and then the defense can always say, we want another evaluation, or we have our own doctors already done an evaluation. And so this matter will be delayed and delayed and delayed. More than likely, the young Mr. Crumley did not suffer from a mental defect or disease that would impair their ability to understand or appreciate what they were doing. And even if he is found not guilty by reason of insanity, he doesn't go home. He goes to the state hospital where he would probably spend the rest of his life. I'm going to jump on a limb here and say, I don't think young Mr. Crumley meets the definition of NGRI. I haven't seen the paperwork in it, but from what I've seen, been able to observe, I just don't think that's the case. I think the defense has nothing and they're trying to come up with something. I appreciate that. I do. I get it. But sometimes you got to save your powder for the real clients that have mental health issues so that you can, have a little credibility with the court. Remember this video? Yeah, of the guy walking out of the Rite Aid in New York City that was taken by actor Michael Rapaport. Well, it's getting a lot of attention. In fact, not only did it go viral, but the police have initiated an investigation. As we stated, the video was posted on social media and shows the man strolling out of the store while the security guard looks on. The video caught the attention of the NYPD as well as the Rite Aid executives. The spokesperson for Rite Aid said the company store had experienced an increased level of brazen theft and organized retail crime over the past year. Now, in the latest Instagram post, Rapaport claimed that the store was set to be permanently closed because of the rampant theft. He wrote, "I was just informed that the Rite Aid is closing on February 15th because of this, leaving the workers jobless," tagging the New York City mayor, Eric Adams. Rite Aid announced last month that it would be closing 63 stores in a move that expected to save the company at least $25 million a year. But let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, the unintended consequences of crime. Listen, who wants to operate a business where items that the company has paid for are going to walk out the door and their own security guards can't do anything? The police aren't going to spend the time to investigate shoplifting. You might as well just open the door and say, come on in and take it. That's the mentality in lots of cities right now. It looks like Mayor Adams is trying to get serious about this, but the previous administration has dug themselves into a hole with the complete lawlessness there, and it's going to take a lot of time to come back. And in the meantime, all those Rite Aid employees are out of a job, and the community that Rite Aid supports is gone. Now, some could say, oh, it's just corporate greed. Why don't they keep it open? Listen, ladies and gentlemen, nobody runs a business as a charity. It doesn't run that way. It doesn't work that way at all. You have to make money to be able to buy the products to do that. Storefront isn't free. The electric bill isn't paid for by the companies. The companies have to make money. The electric bill is not paid by the utilities for free, right? The companies have to make money to be able to have a store. And when you can no longer make money there, guess what? You have to shut it down. Simple economics. And guess what? People like security, and they like to know that where they're going to go is going to be safe. Think about it. Would you go to the crappy part of town to go shopping? Of course you wouldn't. You would go if the area got cleaned up and you weren't going to worry about getting robbed. You're more worried about having your car carjacked. It's that simple, ladies and gentlemen. It's common sense. I don't get why people, particularly those in politics, don't seem to get it. There's no such thing as a free ride anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. You got to work for it. And anything worth having is worth working for. So if you want a safe community, people need to start looking at themselves and saying, what can I do to make this place a safer place? Next on the docket, Prince Andrew gives an answer. So according to some legal papers filed Wednesday in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York, Prince Andrew has formally denied the allegations that he did anything wrong with Virginia Guffrey, however the hell you pronounce it, and has demanded a jury trial in her civil lawsuit that she has filed. Now, as you may recall, Miss Jeffrey, alleged that Prince Andrew did terrible things to her at that guy named Jeff's private island in the U.S. Virgin Islands and at his mansion in Manhattan and his former girlfriend Ghislaine Maxwell's home in London. Now, the prince repeatedly denied any abuse whatsoever. He denied that he was a close friend of Miss Maxwell, and he denied that he was a frequent guest of that guy named Jeff. Now, this filing comes 2 weeks after a federal judge denied Prince Andrew's motion to dismiss the lawsuit, and the prince has until July 14th to potentially answer questions about the case under oath. Now, following a ruling made by Judge Lewis Kaplan last year, if the case is not settled, Andrew could face a trial between September and December of 2022. Boy, you can't wait to be there for that one. So let's get real, ladies and gentlemen. These are allegations some 20 years old, where the legislature granted relief so that people could sue. And then you have a situation where the complaining witness was 17 at the time. Certainly not of age in some jurisdictions, but of age in other jurisdictions. You may recall the complaining witness in this case did not testify in the case of Ghislaine Maxwell for some unknown reason. Perhaps it was because of the money settlements that she's already received. And it's not enough, apparently. She needs more. And I get it if she's truly been a victim of it. But at some point, you have to kind of wonder, when is enough enough? And maybe this is the defense attorney here speaking. But when you bring 20-year-old claims, you really deny people due process. It's not fair. If I was to come and say, oh, any one of you did something to me 20 years ago, it's really bad. Let me tell you where it may or may not have happened because my memory has faded so much. And there may have been witnesses there that I don't recall their names, and you may not have access to any of that information either. But don't worry, I think this is going to be fair. And I made a serious allegation. And how do you disprove a negative? It's very difficult to do so. All you can do is say it didn't happen. That's it. And then we have a swearing contest in court where the jury will decide who to believe. Is it going to be the complaining witness, or is it going to be Prince Andrew? Now, Prince Andrew sure didn't look like an innocent guy when he gave those interviews on TV. He looked, well, pathetic as he sweated and gave ridiculous answers. He was hanging around with, you know, that guy named Jeff, who, not good. But there's a lot of people that were hanging out with that man named Jeff, and they're not being sued, and they don't have criminal charges against them. You just have to wonder. I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of 20-plus-year-old litigation. I don't care if it's a civil case or if it is a criminal case. It simply is not fair. And I get bad things happen. Truly know this. I have seen it, and I've seen the effects that it have had on people that have been the victim of abuse. But at a certain point, you have to be able to come forward and say, we need to make things right. But 20 years down the road, I just have a real problem with that. All right, that ought to get the comments fired up, right? All right, let's move on to our dumb criminal of the day. Unfortunately, that's right, it's another Florida man is facing federal prison after he pled guilty to stealing his twin brother's identity to take advantage of his brother's veterans benefits. Wayne Bowen, get this, 64, of Jacksonville, used the name, Social Security card, and military discharge papers of his twin brother to apply for housing benefits back in 2014. Now, unlike his twin, Wayne Bowen is not a military veteran. Wayne was even arrested and convicted of felony offenses under his twin's name. His twin brother confirmed with authorities that he did not apply for the benefits, nor did he give Wayne permission to use his name. Wayne Bowen faces a mandatory penalty of 2 years in federal prison. Ladies and gentlemen, we've talked about this before, right? Don't take other people's property unless you have permission. And by God, don't use somebody else's identity without permission. And even then, you probably shouldn't, or you can't. So just don't do it. All right? That's why, well, the one twin, you're a dumb criminal of the day. Only one of you are, though. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.